I don't think there's a world where Notre Dame goes any worse than 11-1, but betting on over 11.5 is just not something I do. I would say maybe find the best price on Notre Dame to qualify for the college football playoff. I cannot imagine a scenario where if they're 11-1 at worst, they get left out again.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and joined by friend of the pod. Joined us a bunch last offseason, and this will be, I would imagine, first of many visits with Joshua Nunn of the Action Network. Follow him on Twitter at StepOnADuck. We're in the midst of handicapping the NCAA tournament, and I've pulled you away, Josh, from talking college hoop to talk a little college football, but we saw win totals drop at a couple of books, notable FanDuel, BetMGM. Obviously, some other spots are up as well. But how you doing, brother? Good to catch up with you. And we're 157 days away from week zero. So the countdown is on, baby.
Can't come soon enough, Tim. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for having me on today. You know, I was so excited for this episode because regular season wins are so near and dear to my heart. This is my favorite derivative market to bet on in any sport in America. I love college football regular season wins. We have the full listing of the P4 plus Notre Dame. So it's really exciting to dive into the rosters, the schedules that are getting finalized. And I think it's going to be really helpful this season with just the one transfer portal time period. So that way we can get a real good fingerprint of what these rosters are looking like and how these teams are going to shore up come August. So we can get out ahead of that. But yeah, I mean, this is my first love. It's been trying to pull double duty here with the NCAA tournament going on and trying to continue to cap that and get people to the window there. It's a real fun time of the season, but college football cannot get here soon enough, my friend, and I know you feel the same.
Oh, can't wait. Yeah, the week zero lineup is getting a little more robust than usual. Obviously, our beloved Bows will be a part of it as they travel to Stanford, but you've also got two abroad games, UNC, TCU, NC State, Virginia. But we added USC hosting San Jose State, North Dakota State, Jacksonville State. So we got some games in total, eight games part of week zero. But we're going to talk win totals because, as mentioned, they dropped already. And let's dive into a big boy. Obviously, it was a very forgettable season a year ago. All the expectations, Duck, for Penn State. Would they win the national title? Would they finally get over that hump? Well, that didn't happen. They ended up at the Pinstripe Bowl. They fired their coach. And now I'm wearing a little bit of a Matt Campbell-ish hat right now. I'm kind of bent brim. I'm feeling my Matt Campbell right now. But you're not necessarily feeling Matt Campbell. Win total, 9.5. We've got a non-con of Marshall, Temple, Buffalo. No Ohio State, no Oregon, no Indiana, but you still have some questions about this Penn State team when you look at a win total of 9.5.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's a lot to be excited about with Matt Campbell at the helm in Happy Valley, but I'm not convinced that this is a real coaching upgrade over James Franklin. And with the amount of production that was lost compared to what they return, I just didn't think 10 was the number. Rocco Becht will be an upgrade at quarterback, but when you look at the two stud running backs in Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, they're both gone. And I think Carson Hansen can be serviceable in the backfield for Penn State, but he brings over a different skill set and not as much zest and explosiveness. So they'll definitely take a step back in the run game department. Eight of the top nine receivers and four contributing tight ends vacate. And you've got now most of Iowa State's skill guys making the move over. I just don't really see an upgrade in the skill position rooms there. The offensive line loses four out of five starters from last season, along with three backups that participated in the two deep. You got a couple Cyclones that come over to help fill the gaps, but this offensive line is going to be a work in progress, and I think it's going to take some time to get going. I look at the front seven defensively. It's a complete revamp with 11 of the top 13 on the D-line gone, and five of the top seven producing linebackers are also needing to be replaced. I know there's going to be a little infusion of P4 talent from Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and UCLA, but it's going to take some time to get this thing pointed in the right direction defensively. I think if I can caution anyone on Penn State, when they roll their team out there, it's not going to be the same type of defense that we had over the last couple of seasons. Three starters in the secondary are also gone, so there's more work needing to be done there. And also for Matt Campbell, not having Heacock as the defensive coordinator is going to be really interesting. And I think it's going to be really telling to see what this defense morphs into this season. But again, I think it's going to take a step back. The schedule is interesting because it's not exceedingly difficult, but you do have losable games against Wisconsin. Going to Northwestern won't be easy. USC comes to town. You got to go to Michigan. You go to Washington, and you get a home bout with Minnesota. Michigan comes in off a bye. Washington will have had its bye week before playing Penn State. And you've got those four other tougher games bunched together with playing the Badgers, Northwestern, USC, and Michigan before the bye week. I just think once we get into the season and we look at the product on the field for Penn State, it's going to be very evident that 8-4 is much more likely than 10-2 for this first season. So with that in mind, I played under 9.5.
Yeah, 9.5 right now at Sportsbooks. Juice, pretty similar. FanDuel, -148. BetMGM, -145. So Penn State under for you. Yeah, I do like DeAnton Lynn coming over to his alma mater, but I agree. You know, it's going to take a little bit of time there and, you know, for Penn State to get things rolling there. Let's go to a team, Duck, that has kind of stolen gamblers' hearts over the last 2 years, and that's the Vanderbilt Commodores, right? They have been a juggernaut against the spread. A lot of that has to do with their former quarterback, Diego Pavia, even though he certainly tried to stay as their quarterback. I'm sure he would have stayed there forever if he could have. You know, we faded him in a bowl game against Iowa, catching points, and the Hawkeyes won that game outright. So looking at this Vanderbilt team, they don't go to the portal. It looks like they're going to go with the five-star freshman, Jared Curtis, at the quarterback position. And when you think about this, you know, Vanderbilt's schedule, the non-con, as you would imagine, is very manageable because that's just kind of been their way. It's Austin Peay, Delaware, and NC State. So they do have a P4 team on there. And then from a SEC standpoint, at Auburn, at Georgia, at Mississippi State, at Florida, home games to Ole Miss, Arkansas, Alabama, and Tennessee. Win total right now sitting at 6.5. What do you make of the Commodores this year?
I think it's an under. That's the least amount of returning production of anybody at the P4 level. Replacing Diego Pavia is going to be very difficult for Vanderbilt this season. Remember, before he got there, Vandy was an SEC bottom feeder that really struggled to stack wins together. And I'm not suggesting that they return to the cellar in that way this season, but Pavia was just such a special talent and he brought such a skill set to Vanderbilt that they hadn't seen at the quarterback position in some time. Beyond Diego Pavia, they do lose two of their top three receivers and Eli Stowers, who was such a pressure relief outlet for Pavia all season last year. Four of the five on the offensive line that started and played the most snaps are gone from what Clark Lee called the best offensive line that he's ever coached at Vanderbilt. So it's going to be really tough to replace the offensive line continuity. Not only are they retooling the offensive line, but the D-line is a complete revamp. Four of the top five are gone on the defensive line. I think it's just too much to replace in the trenches to see Vanderbilt gain a lot of momentum and stack a lot of wins together consistently early on. I think the schedule is fairly challenging, save for Austin Peay and Delaware. They should have no trouble with those two. But North Carolina State at home at best is going to be lined a coin flip. You've got back-to-back roadies at Auburn and at Georgia, which they'll be underdogs in. Ole Miss comes to town. You've got the Hogs and Kentucky that you've got to get through before the bye week. You're probably looking at a 1-1 split there. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if Vandy starts this season 4-4 or worse before the bye week. And then the close is very tough. You got Bama, Florida, and Tennessee, and you're going to be touchdown dogs in all three of those, needing to win at least two to clear the win total of 6.5. And that's if you win a road game in Stark Vegas on November 7th. So I think it's a rebuilding year for Vanderbilt. I don't think all the momentum will be lost, but I think it's fighting, clawing, and scratching their way to get to 6-6. I think 7 wins is unattainable here, given the way the schedule lays out, who they lose. There's just too much to replace in the trenches, and taking Diego Pavio away from that team will have just a cataclysmic impact. So this is another one where I think 7 wins is out of reach, and I took under 6.5.
All right. Fade in Vanderbilt. No more the under god in Diego Pavia there in Nashville. So we will see if they come back to normalcy. I mean, look, when Clark Lee took this thing over, Duck, if they were saying, hey, we get to 6-6 wins every year, I think every Vanderbilt fan would be raising their hand. And now you've got a basketball team that has aspirations of going deep in the dance. Obviously, we know how they came up short against Nebraska. Now you got a football program. They want to win a lot of SEC games. It used to just be a baseball school down in Vanderbilt.
Yeah, the athletic department has really invested in the facilities and has embraced the NIL. And, you know, Clark Lee, in my opinion, has made good on his promise. People laughed at him when he said he was going to turn Vandy into a power. They really laughed at him when his first game there, they were losing by 3 touchdowns at home to East Tennessee State. But he has really done a great job of making Vandy a formidable tough out in SEC play. It's no longer the free bye week that it used to be.
All right, let's get to... let's go to Wake Forest. Let's get a little ACC flavor in our life. Quarterback position, I guess it's going to be Gio Lopez, which can't really get too many people all that inspired down there in Winston-Salem. So you've got Gio Lopez coming in from North Carolina. Maybe it's a buy-low opportunity for this Wake Forest team. But taking a look at their schedule, their win total right now is sitting at 6.5 at BetMGM. So make sure you look around because BetMGM is 6.5. The rest of the market's at 5.5. So keep that in mind. They do have Miami. They've got Louisville on there. They've got to go to Cal, which is always tricky. You know, always the midseason game against Merrimack should be an easy one for Wake Forest. But Wake Forest win total sitting at 6.5 here for the Demon Deacons.
I mean, it was a really good first season for Jake Dickert at Wake Forest in year one. But the biggest challenges for this year are going to have to replace an offensive line that loses 4 out of 5 starters, and you lose your bell cow running back in Damon Claiborne that ran for 907 yards in the ACC. You've got to replace both your tackles and your starting center. That's going to be really difficult for Wake Forest. You mentioned Gio Lopez, who comes in from UNC. He was just put into a situation with limited playmakers and a patchwork offensive line, and he struggled mightily in the ACC all season at North Carolina. Now Wake Forest loses their most explosive running back and 9 of the top 11 receivers from last season. Wake Forest was already so limited offensively, but I'm just not sure where the explosive plays come from. And they really needed that at times last season as they were not able to stack successful methodical drives together. I look at Gio Lopez. He struggled in the ACC with downfield throws and really looked nothing like the player that we saw him develop into at South Alabama. The running prowess was gone, and that's going to be something that has to be reinvigorated at Wake Forest because the Deacs run their quarterbacks a lot. Robbie Ashford was the second leading rusher on the team in carries, rushing touchdowns, and yards. So maybe there's a little bit of that can be rejuvenated for Gio Lopez. If not, I think it's going to be real trouble for their offense. You know, the defense for Wake actually shores up okay. I think the front should keep Wake Forest in some games this season in ACC play. There are some losses in the secondary, which provide some weakness in pass coverage, but Brian Blades coming over from FIU is going to be really instrumental in helping them there. But the schedule is tough. I'm not going to consider a Big Ten roadie at Purdue a free win. I think Purdue will be much more formidable in year two under Barry Odom. An ACC play starts right away for Wake Forest. They've got Miami and Louisville right off the bat. Then Stanford comes in before back-to-back road trips against North Carolina State and Cal. I think it's 3-4 or even 2-5 before the bye week for Wake Forest. And then you look at how they close league play. They've got to play UVA. They go to SMU. They go to Georgia Tech. And they have Duke coming in. Well, they could be an underdog in all four of those situations. You could make an argument that the Deacs will be lined underdogs in every road game they play this season. This is another one where I think that this program has built some positive momentum. And this year, it's all about just getting your team to a bowl game. 7 wins seems completely out of reach for Wake Forest here. And there's still some pretty good vig on this at BetMGM -115. So under 6.5 is where I went with Wake Forest.
You know, Duck, we've had this conversation before in recent years when we go through win totals and what's the difference between a win. It is pretty wild to see that one notable national shop FanDuel is 5.5 and the juice is -130 to the over. And then you've got 6.5 -115 to the under. You could certainly try if you'd want to middle this and have it land on 6. But I'm just kind of curious your philosophy. You mentioned it to start. You love betting win totals. It's your favorite thing to do. You know, how important is a win? How expensive is it? I've talked to Brad Powers in the past. He says it's worth about 70 cents. How do you equate a win in the market and how do you go about it when you're betting these things?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that when you find those offages of half a win, it's really important to assess the vig and the schedule. An over-under of 7.5 is a lot different than an over-under of 8. You got to win that extra game. It just creates such little margin for error on the top side of that. But I value a half a win about 60 cents. And so when you find these situations in the market where you have comparable juice and the win is a full win off, I really think one of these markets is wrong. And so we'll know about probably 3-4 weeks into the season what that is. But this could be an opportunity to try to middle both because you're not paying a lot of juice on either side. And I think there's a very high probability that the number is 6 for Wake Forest this season. The other thing it allows you to do is if you have an over 5.5 and an under 6.5, you're probably in a very good position at the end of the season to make a bet on Wake Forest's last regular season game and ensure that you win 2 out of 3 of those bets. So it gives you a lot of good opportunities to try to middle that or to put yourself in a situation to come out of the wager profitable at the end of the season. I think it's very unlikely that Wake Forest wins 7 games. So if you're wanting to try to thread the needle over 5.5, I don't hate. But yeah, I think in this situation with the juice, the way that it's at between these two shops, you're probably in a good position to try to do something like that.
Well, and we're so early, you know, with these win totals. I was actually talking to an odds maker last night and he was a little bit frustrated. He's like, man, they put out these win totals much earlier. He's like, I had kind of my game plan of when I wanted to put out my win totals and they sped it up a little bit. So this is earlier. So to your point, if you're ready as you are and prepared to fire on some of these win totals, now is a great time. All right. One more win total that you really like. And then we're going to get into the unique situation of Notre Dame and Texas Tech. And that's Cincinnati. So Cincinnati, of course, loses Brendan Sorsby. He goes to Texas Tech, and they're going to bring in J.C. French from Georgia Southern. They've got a non-conference schedule of Boston College, Western Carolina, and they will play Miami, Ohio on a neutral site. I believe that'll be at the Bengals Stadium. They've got a brutal stretch in October, back-to-back games. They get them at home, but back-to-back games against Texas Tech and Utah. They wrap up the season at BYU, so really no favors given to the Bearcats, and I wonder if that's why you're looking at the under here for Cincinnati.
Certainly the schedule is a huge part of it. There's a significant quarterback downgrade this year going from Brendan Sorsby to either Liam O'Brien, who comes in from the Ivy League in Penn, or J.C. French, who played at Georgia Southern last season. The skill position players for Cincinnati are decimated. 5 of the top 6 running backs are gone from last season, along with the top 5 receivers for Cincinnati. And so where's the offensive explosivity going to come from? Cincinnati thrived last year in garnering explosive chunk plays and quick scoring drives. And I just don't think we see that this year from the Bearcats. I look at J.C. French, who I figure to win the job. He took way too many sacks last season and also struggled at times bailing early from the pocket rather than going through his pass progressions. He would just routinely bail unnecessarily. I think the sack numbers go up significantly for Cincinnati this year, and their offense is not able to mask some of the defensive problems. You know, the defense for Cincinnati was such a liability last season, but nobody talked about it because Cincinnati was winning games and they started 7-1. But the defense gave up 4.5 yards per carry on the ground last season. They had a 20-2 touchdown to interception ratio against them. 20 touchdown passes allowed to just 2 team interceptions. It was just a real bad pass coverage unit. And now you've got 4 of the top defensive backs that are gone, and Cincinnati is now relying on Mac transfers to try to stop gap and fill the void. The defensive line should get decimated this entire season on the ground. Just 3 of the top 12 return. It's not going to go well for this defense. And I think the schedule features very few assured wins. We look at the non-conference with Boston College and Miami of Ohio, their rival in the NFL stadium in the neutral environment is going to be pretty difficult, in my opinion. And then when Cincinnati gets into Big 12 play, they play 6 of the projected top 7 teams in the Big 12 this season. I could see this group at maybe 2-3 before the bye week. You know, maybe they pluck off either Boston College or Miami of Ohio, and then they'll win their FCS game. But Kansas State will be improved. Arizona will be improved. And then it gets really tough, as you had alluded to, at West Virginia, Texas Tech and Utah coming in, at Houston, at Iowa State. Holy smokes, that stretch is just so brutal. And then they close at BYU. There's just way too much lost production. J.C. French struggled with turnovers, he struggled with sacks, and he struggled with going through his progression in the Sun Belt. I don't think he's the answer this season for Cincinnati. I think the offense just takes such a significant step back, and the defense, when you peel back the layers of the onion, the defense will be exposed and exploited this year as the bad unit that they were last year. There's just too much lost production on both sides of the ball and not enough playmakers returning. So I don't have Cincinnati making a bowl game this season. With plus money here, I love under 5.5.
Yeah, plus 108 FanDuel, I think plus 105 BetMGM out there on this Cincinnati team. And you also have to factor in this, you know, you and I love situational spots, Duck. And at some point, the heat is going to get there. And does Scott Satterfield, who probably enters this year already on the hot seat, does this team, do they fire him midseason? Is this a situation where, you know, it unravels? So, yeah, very curious to see how ultimately plays out. And the Big 12, like we discussed, didn't really give him any favors. Before we dive into Notre Dame and Texas Tech and their unusual win total here, Duck, how much do you lean into returning production? I know Bill Conley, who we're going to have on the podcast here in the next couple of weeks, he put out his returning production article this week, and it's a lot different than it has been with the portal. I know a lot of people who do returning production numbers trying to kind of concoct it on, all right, how much are you getting from the transfer portal? So, you know, you mentioned Vanderbilt 106. I believe they are the lowest Power 4 team in returning production in the country. You've got Cincinnati at 50, Wake Forest at 62. How much do you, Duck, put emphasis, Penn State, by the way, 67, so the 4 teams we've talked about. How much do you put into returning production in 2026?
I think it's a huge element of it. I think you have to get a kind of a good painted picture of what you're going to have in each of those skill position rooms and at quarterback and along the trenches. And I think if you're appropriately able to project what incoming players who had success at other places are going to be able to contribute to your team, it really helps kind of get the ball pointed in the right direction. And so, I mean, that's really, it's a huge part of the landscape now where you have routinely these teams have 35 players coming and 35 players going. And so when you have, and I think Bill Connolly does a great job with his formula, and he kind of outlays how he weighs production at lower levels for players that are transferring up from G5 to P4 or from FCS to G5 and so on and so forth. I think he does a really good job of that. Yeah, I think it's right up there as some of the most important factors. Schedule is a huge driver. If you win a scheduling lotto or if you have an unfavorable draw in these unbalanced 18-team super leagues, that's a critical factor. Coordinator changes are really critical. If you're installing new offensive or defensive systems, that takes time to get the repetition in practice and then simulating game action. All those things play a huge role. But returning production and transfer portal added returning production like Colin Wilson does, those are all really critical metrics to try to assess a team's success this early into the offseason.
All right, well, let's dive into this unique situation that we have with Texas Tech and Notre Dame. They are both, and I was curious to see, Duck, what their win total would be. And sure enough, it's 11.5. Now, it's juice to the under, but we're talking about both these teams need to go undefeated in order for you to win your win total here. But let's start with Texas Tech and run through their schedule. FCS Abilene Christian, at Oregon State, Houston, Sam Houston, at Colorado, who win total, I think, 4.5. Arizona State, at Cincy, Arizona, West Virginia, at Oklahoma State, at Baylor, TCU. So no Utah, no BYU. They will be probably a double-digit favorite in every single game. That said, it's college football, man. We saw it last year, and Morton gets hurt, and they lose a game to Arizona State. Texas Tech obviously should win all their games, but man, it is really hard, Duck, on March 25th when we're recording this to say, hey, go play plus 150, plus 155, whatever it is, on Texas Tech over, knowing they cannot have one slip up.
Yeah, and it's just not a bet that I recommend or that I would make myself. I do believe that there's a QB upgrade that'll be realized with Brennan Sorsby coming into Lubbock. The offensive line is in great shape, as is the running back room, which was so potent last season for the Red Raiders. The receiver room loses some guys, but they also have five guys back that contributed in the pass catching department, and they add some power four transfers who contributed at Pitt, Auburn, and even a guy from Liberty in Dante Lee, who will help Texas Tech in the pass receiving department. The defense is nasty once again. And, you know, while the Red Raiders did have some guys from all three levels of the defense that did leave, I think they reloaded well and they plucked some talent in the transfer portal. So once again, this will be one of the best defenses in America, not just the Big 12. The schedule is favorable early on, and Texas Tech should have no issue whatsoever being 5-0 before the bye week. TCU and Arizona probably provide the most serious threat of knocking off Texas Tech, but as you had alluded to, Texas Tech will be 14-point favorites in each of those games, or at least they should be. So it's really tough to envision these guys losing a game, but Texas Tech also at times played tight on the road last season, and it's a long season. It's a very physical sport. There are certainly the possibilities of injuries at key positions, and so I don't want to have my money dependent on Texas Tech being perfect. I think the better bet, if you're trying to go long on TTU, is to find a market, and that could be a traditional book or it could be a prediction market out there that has Texas Tech priced to win the Big 12 at about even money. I think they have to lose two or maybe even three times not to get to the Big 12 championship game. And so you have a really, really good opportunity there at about even money for Texas Tech to win the league. I think they're the best team in this league. They should be decided favorites in every game. So that's the route I took, is I took Texas Tech at about even money to win the Big 12.
All right, and then we'll wrap with Notre Dame so everyone can go ahead and drink. We have mentioned Notre Dame on another podcast, but 11.5 is the win total, Duck. Similar juice. I think BetMGM has the same juice, plus 160 to the over. Look, I would love to sit right here and say, hey, they're going undefeated. They will be a favorite every game, but you know, unlike Texas Tech, I actually think this schedule, as much as people have taken their jabs at it, I'm not going to say it's Texas's schedule by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, Wisconsin should be better. I think Notre Dame should handle them there, but Notre Dame's a 16.5-point favorite on a neutral against the Badgers. They have to go to BYU. They play Miami. SMU should be a top 20 team. So Notre Dame will be a favorite in every game. I don't know what the Miami line will be, Duck. Probably touchdown, if I had to guess. Maybe a little bit higher with it being in South Bend, and that'll be a geeked-up atmosphere, no doubt. It'll be a night game. But same question about the Irish. You know, minus $2 to the under, plus 160 to the over. They'll be a favorite in every single game. Maybe a couple more possible landmines for stubbing of toes for the Irish. But, I mean, they're saying all the right things. They're motivated, and the motto right now Marcus Freeman is saying to his team is leave no doubt. That's where they've turned the page to after getting left out of the playoff a year ago at 10-2.
Yeah, and you know, I think the schedule is favorable to be able to stack wins together and build some positive momentum for Notre Dame. I do think the opener against Wisconsin at Lambeau is going to be more difficult than anticipated. This is such a spot for Wisconsin, and I think the Badgers will be much better equipped offensively. We saw it last year when they just didn't have an FBS-level quarterback conducting the orchestra on offense. But with Colton Joseph in the fold, I think Wisconsin will have some pieces to where that offense will be able to at least move the football and not stick that defense out there in such terrible situations like they did all of last season. BYU on the road is an interesting spot. Could be a tricky game before the bye week. But the spot to back Notre Dame this season, lay the number, is November 7th. If you don't think Marcus Freeman has this game circled in red ink ever since the schedule, taped on the weight room, in everybody's locker, absolutely, with Miami being selected over Notre Dame to get to the college football playoff. Now, you could make an argument that they kind of backed in Alabama or Oklahoma, but the way the TVs presented it was Miami over Notre Dame. And I would imagine that's a spot for the Irish to maybe dish out a little payback. November 7th, it'll be cold temperatures, the home environment, whatever the number is, I'll be laying it with the Irish on that day. So mark your calendar, because if game of the year lines come out light on that, that's an opportunity to pounce early. Overall, I don't think there's a world where Notre Dame goes any worse than 11-1. But betting on over 11.5 is just not something I do. I would say maybe find the best price on Notre Dame to qualify for the college football playoff. I cannot imagine a scenario where if they're 11-1 at worst, they get left out again. But I think it's a strong team. I think they're strong in the trenches. I think their defense will be formidable. I think when you get another year of development for Carr at quarterback, that he'll be just that much more potent. If they get some running backs to emerge, I think that Notre Dame will have a really, really strong season in South Bend. I would lean over the 11.5, but doing that with such a long season in a situation where, I mean, with the 12-team playoff, these teams don't have to be perfect anymore. Notre Dame can qualify at 11-1. Can't have two losses, but you can have one. And there are a couple of tricky spots there. So I don't want to go over 11.5, but I do think Notre Dame's going to make the playoff and be a very, very tough out when it gets there.
Yeah, I'm curious. You know, you and I love to look at the schedules. I agree. I think Notre Dame and Freeman's history of getting the team up for big games, whether it be at Texas A&M 2 years ago, what happened after that, they lose to Northern Illinois, whether it be USC with Caleb Williams coming to town, either Navy in Foxborough on Halloween prior to Miami or the Boston College game after Miami. Those are going to be massive numbers, maybe a little sleepy spots. So we'll do a little situational spots like we always do. But Duck, always appreciate it, man. To recap it, we will go with Duck's bets of Penn State under 9.5, Vandy under 6.5, Cincinnati under 5.5, Wake Forest under 6.5. BetMGM has that number, so make sure you get it at BetMGM. Duck, you're doing awesome work over the Action Network. Let people know where they can grab all of your content.
Yeah, so we do several podcast drops weekly at the Action Network. We're really knee deep into it for college basketball right now. Got a Friday live show. I have a Saturday live show. We'll be doing a ton of off-season college football content. And then this college football season, you'll find me at Action Network. I also do the BetUS show with Kyle Hunter, so you can find me there. I've been on your program routinely, and I look forward to participating in that. I'm on the Kyle Kerms show on YouTube. There's a lot of places you can find me to discuss college football during the season.
It's always a great thing. At Step on a Duck. He got rid of the one. He's just at Step on a Duck. Joshua Nunn, Action Network. Josh, always appreciate it, brother. Best of luck with your college hoop bets, and we will certainly be talking before we know it again, talking college football.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me on. We'll catch you guys at the window.
We'll take a quick break right here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, we're wrapping things up. Thanks again to Joshua Nunn for giving us a breakdown of his early best bets when it comes to win totals. We will certainly have him on again. One of my favorite things to do with Duck is look at the situational spots for the upcoming college football season, scouring through all the schedules, who has a big game coming up, and will we get a letdown spot? Will we get a look ahead? Still, a couple years ago, my favorite spot, we talked about it on the podcast, I think it was 2 years ago, Memphis, after they had lost Mike Norvell, went to Florida State, and then the following week, they would play Navy on the road. Navy was off a bye. Memphis beat Florida State. Lo and behold, the Mids won that game outright, I think is around a touchdown underdog. So we'll do our best to take a look at some of those situational spots as we always love to do. NFL draft right around the corner. Debating whether or not we want to venture into a little NFL draft betting. I will pass along this. Matt Eumanns loves over 1.5 quarterbacks selected in the first round. I will say I don't love it as much as Matt does. He is strongly believing that Ty Simpson is going to be a first round pick. He doesn't necessarily believe that he'll be the first overall pick like some ESPN analysts might believe. But yeah, when I look at the NFL draft market, it's always a market that moves fast. And sometimes on these podcasts, when you give out a play, they move very quickly. So we will see. Vegas Refund, Luke Swain is one of the best when it comes to the NFL draft. So I highly recommend giving him a follow on Twitter as we are about to embark really knee deep into NFL draft season, less than a month away. All right. Like I said, wrapping things up, cfbpod@vsin.com. Shoot us an email if you have a guest you'd like to hear from this offseason, a topic you'd like us to hit on. We got a little bit more time to dive into things. I ran into a friend of the podcast at the Circa Sportsbook during March Madness, and he was appreciative of the early start to the season. So we are here for you guys to hopefully get us to the window a little sooner. We had a very good win total season a year ago. And Bill Conley, I was exchanging some text messages with him earlier this week. As I mentioned with Duck, he does have his article out for Returning Production. Highly recommend you reading that. And Bill will be on the podcast, I think, at some point in April. So we will definitely catch up with ESPN's Bill Conley at some point and a ton of other guests as we get you ready for the college football season. I did just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor all last football season. I'm wearing a little bit of their gear right now, Rainbow Authentics. They were the best, really helped us out. We had some great sponsors all year long, obviously here on the podcast, including Nahoku, our guy Steve Bookatz. Get better. Steve dealing with, a little hip injury, but he'll be back swinging the sticks, I'm sure, in no time. But yeah, wanted to just give him a shout out. Mike was in town for the Big West tournament with the Hawaii basketball team. And not only did he hook up me with some tickets for the game, which was amazing, but also we had the Hawaii men's basketball coach, Aram Ganat, Ian Big Fish Johnson in studio for Selection Sunday, which was great. So always appreciate to our guy, Mike. He has been absolutely the best. And check out rainbowauthentics.com. They've got some new gear up there. So check it out. Get ready for the upcoming season. As always, it helps out Hawaii athletics. But that's going to do it for our podcast. Please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Just a reminder, every episode is up on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. So check that out, youtube.com. Also, iTunes, Spotify, give us a 5-star review. It does go a long way. But thanks again to Joshua Nunn, our guest today at Step on a Duck, if you want to follow him on Twitter. Thanks to our two producers, Wyatt Tomchek and Ryan Hunter, who always do a tremendous job making sure we get this out as quickly as possible. I'm Tim Murray. You could follow me at @1TimMurray. We'll be back next week with another episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.